joined by Phil, who's one of my closest friends. We've done a fair bit of travelling together. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rich.
So usually I approach you with an idea for the show about what we want to talk about, but on this occasion, you had an idea that you wanted to come on the show and talk about. So what is that idea?
Yeah, you're spot on. Normally, in the past, the podcasts we've done have always been about what places we've been to and what we've done and how amazing and wonderful travelling is. And while that is the case, it's sometimes nice to hear the side of travelling that people don't speak about, the side that is less fun. And we've got quite a lot of topics in mind that we can talk about, but it's just a reality check, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I thought it was a really good idea, good thing to talk about. It's not going to come across as two guys just whinging about the privilege of travelling the world as such, but I think it's more, like you say, a reality check, just things to be aware of. But before we make everybody feel really miserable...
That's not our intention.
Let's just talk about a little bit about your travel history and where you've been.
Yeah, so me and you, we both started off together in 2012. We headed to Asia and Southeast Asia specifically. We went to Singapore, Malaysia and Thailand together. And then we carried on our separate ways and I ended up going to Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, China. We then did a year in Australia together and we connected back up and had a great time there. And since then I've been various places. I did another 6 months around South America, another couple of months over in Europe, and a little bit in Africa, but not really done Africa much yet. So
same with a lot of people, that one there. I think you find it's one of the last ones that people go to.
Yeah, it's one of my ambitions, and hopefully in the next few years I'll be in a position to come on and do some more podcasts about how amazing Africa is.
Why do you travel?
Oh, wow. Why not? You've got one life. I think as a race of human beings, we're very inquisitive. Why do anything? Why go out anywhere? I think maybe even when I was a kid, everyone has a dream of being an astronaut because it's that amazing thing. You can go somewhere no one else has been. You can explore. And I think I've just got this inherent thing where I want to go and explore the world. And genuinely, there is not one single country that I do not want to visit. And I hope by the time I'm 90... I have been to every single country in the entire world.
It's a solid ambition. And believe it or not, I've had somebody on who's already visited every country.
Yeah, I remember listening to that podcast.
Yeah, and then that's enough positivity. And it's time to make people feel miserable and talk about the downsides of travelling. So, Phil, do you want to choose our first topic?
Well, I think to start off, it's the obvious one that most people will think about when you're travelling. It's simply you're away from your family and friends and special occasions. And, well, all your life until the point when you go travelling, you've been brought up, you're surrounded by your family and your best friends. And then suddenly to go outside of that bubble, even if you go just with one best friend or if you go by yourself, you haven't got that support, you haven't got that reliability. You're forced to meet new people every day. Now, I love meeting new people. I think it's one of the best things about travelling. But when... You're relying on your family. You might just give them a phone call every evening just to check in, or you've got a big news event and you really want to tell your family about this happening, something that's really good happened to you, and you're like, oh, I can't go and call my mum, or my dad's not in now, or it's midnight and they'll be asleep, but it's just happening for me. You just haven't quite got that connection, and you lose that thing. And don't get me wrong, when you come home, it's like nothing's ever changed, but while you're away, you haven't got that support there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's the obvious one. It's definitely a good one to start with. I think for me, obviously I miss my family, I'm close to my family and friends, and it wasn't apparent straight away when I started travelling. It was more as time went by. So, for example, I've got a lot of friendship groups that, when we meet up, it's like a reunion. So, like yourself, Phil, I worked in America for a couple of summers and I got a couple of groups of friends from there, and I've got friends from uni and friends from school. So, I mean, when you get to your 20s, you kind of meet up sporadically, it might be. You don't necessarily meet up every week. It's like every 3-4 months, sometimes more than that. So I remember the first reunion that I missed when being away taking place, and everyone's Facebook statuses going up and pictures of everybody there,
yeah,
having a good time, and it's like, shit, I'm not there. And then more and more of these things happened, and obviously the big one was Christmas for me. Having always spent it with my family, and you have your Christmas routine,
mm-hmm,
of opening presents and giving presents and Christmas dinner and all that. Instead, I was in Chiang Mai, Muay Thai camp. I spent Christmas morning watching some episodes of Friday Night Lights and the Internet Cafe, and then...
Yeah, it's just a bit lonely, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not, well, my Christmas experience, my first one away from the family when I was travelling, I was in Koh Phangan, and my birthday's Christmas Eve, so I'd ended up going to Koh Phangan, I think, on the 23rd of December, and I hadn't got any friends there at that point, but I knew some people I'd met travelling who were going to arrive on the 25th. So I got like 2 days by myself, and it was a bit lonely, especially for your birthday, because although you meet people there that day, they're not your closest friends, so they're not interested in celebrating your birthday. Whereas back home, I go to the pub every year and have a lot, and everyone loves, it's just a great day, and it feels like it's my birthday, and suddenly I haven't got that. And then Christmas Day is the next day, so I try and call the family up, and at that point we were using Skype. So I was, hello, happy Christmas. And there was just so many people in Koh Phangan at that time, you couldn't get on the internet. The internet had just melted down. Effectively, it was, you could not do anything. There was nowhere I could contact them. I couldn't do anything, which is another downside in itself, is sometimes internet reliability can be a bit of a pain in the backside.
But sometimes it can be very, very good and better than what we get over here as well.
Yeah, true. Very true, that, yeah.
Yeah, just sticking to occasions and stuff. Christmas is the big one for me. There's a few weddings I missed, and another one, being a football fan, my team, Crewe Alexandra, got to the cup final. And when I say cup final, I mean the Johnson's Paint Trophy, which is slightly less glamorous way of putting
change
it.
Change its name, I believe. But,
Crewe, very rarely on TV, very rarely successful, and... We end up getting to the finalist competition. It's a day out in Wembley, which is a big deal, especially for a club like Crewe, because you never know when the next one's going to be.
Mm.
And I did get to watch the game, which is fortunate enough, but it was in some news agents come internet cafe on Flinders Street at midnight, and wasn't quite the same as experience Wembley with your friends and your family is what I'm getting at. So.
Yeah. That being Australia, Flinders Street, Melbourne, yeah. So
there wasn't many Crewe fans walking about Melbourne at midnight.
No.
But to be honest, though, some of these occasions, I'd say the juice is definitely worth a squeeze. So for the Wembley trip, we actually got to Wembley the year before that for the playoff final, which was, you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so 2 years on the bounce. So I went to that one, so that was cool to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was good, but I actually went to the better one. Weddings and that, as much as I'm happy for the people getting married and stuff, like, I never look back and go, damn, I wasn't at that wedding. And it's just a few conversations where it's like, oh, do you remember at this person's wedding when this happened and someone said this? I'm like, no, I wasn't there. So
weddings aren't the be-all and end-all. I mean, it's nice to be there, but it doesn't matter if you miss them.
You know, like you said, when you come back, it's... I remember seeing my family for the first time in 2.5 years, and yeah, would I have chosen to spend that time apart from them in hindsight? Probably not, because you do lose that connection for that time. But then when we met back up after such a long time, it was just back to normal.
I think it might be worth you telling you about the experience when you met them back up. Cause wasn't it a bit of something different to normal?
So they go on a family holiday to Lille in northern France every year, just a pre-Christmas trip. They pick up some beer and they like the area, catch a football match. Because I know they were going to be there, I knew I was coming home for Christmas anyway, and I was going to fly back to the UK. And then I realised that, actually, it's probably, I could probably surprise them. I know I can fly to Paris, and Lille's just across from Paris. It wouldn't be expensive to get a train, so I could do that. Lo and behold, had that plan in mind, and the person right in front of me put a Facebook status up saying, oh, I'm looking at going to Paris over Christmas. It's like, anyone interested? I was like, mate, I'm actually planning on doing that. And then we just ironed it out in about 5 minutes and hung around with you for a couple of days, got a train across to Lille, stayed with a guy I'd actually worked with in Melbourne, which is another cool thing about travelling.
Mm.
That's too positive. Let's stick to the negatives. And then, yeah, knew where they were going to be. Had an insider in the job, actually. My brother-in-law just texted him. He told me that they were in the restaurant, and then just
surprised him. It was a lovely surprise. I think there was only one thing that cocked it up, if I remember right. Was something happened in Sydney?
Yeah, so basically, it's topical, actually, in that when I'm near something that's going on, you know, a few times in my life, I've always been pretty safe where I've been, but I've been in the vicinity of something happening that's kind of global news and a bit of a disaster. And one of them would be when I was in California, they had the fires in North California. Mm-hmm. So I landed in California and get to Wi-Fi and it's all these messages. You okay? You're not burning alive? And like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm nowhere near that. But actually, there was some terrorist activity in Sydney. Some guy held people hostage in a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a text when I landed in Paris saying, are you all right? And I noticed that every one of my messages had got the location settings on, and I'm not that tech savvy. So I knew if I said, oh, yeah, I'm fine, it's going to say from Paris, France, and they're going to be like, what?
Yeah.
So I had to work out how to turn the location settings off and send them, which sounds silly now, but for me at the time, I hadn't had a smartphone for a while, so it wasn't that simple.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're just playing out, why isn't he replying? And actually, I've been on a flight for I think they sent it like an hour after I flew. Which,
oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know, it's a long old flight, so they just thought I was ignoring him, whereas actually in the plane for the majority of it and then working out how to use technology. But no, I got away with that. It all worked out fine. They were surprised. My sister kind of had an idea I'd be doing it. She didn't know, but she was just like, oh, I thought you might do something like this.
Your sister knows you well.
Didn't put it on Facebook. Which became a thing at the time, but I don't know, it was more of a private moment for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it is a tough thing, missing family and friends and occasions, but...
Well, I would say the benefits certainly outweigh it. But...
I think managing it as well, keeping in contact, if you can, take a visit home.
Well, I suppose the worst news I had was you were staying with me at the time, and we were in Melbourne in my apartment. And I got my mum on the phone and she told me my granddad died on Skype, which wasn't the nicest thing to hear, but that's part of it. And I was like, oh, do you want me to come back for the funeral? But she said it's not worth it for a 20-minute funeral to get on a 24-hour flight and to cock up all your plans. So you can have your sad times as well, but like you say, it's just managing it and keeping in contact. And
I also remember that your granddad was very adamant that you shouldn't.
Yeah, I think that was the case as well, yeah. So yeah, he'd said, no, don't let Philip come back.
Yeah, which is nice support. Do you want to move on to the next topic, what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, the next topic is scams and being robbed. For those of you who have done a little bit of travelling, you may know that almost when anywhere abroad, a lot of local people certainly see they see you as Western, and therefore automatically assume you have money. And the implication of that is they like to run scams, because a lot of the areas that we travel to in Asia and Central and South America, they don't have much money. So the typical scam that happened to us a lot is in Vietnam and various places like that. They have foreign currency, their own currency, which as the notes have got hundreds of thousands on. So you might have one note saying 10,000 of the local currency and the next note is 100,000. So the normal one is you give a taxi driver a 100,000 note, he'll then switch it and tell you you've only given him a £10,000 note. And if you're not savvy as to what's going on, then you've suddenly spent a hell of a lot more with the taxi and he wants more off you. And that happened to a few times with us as we were travelling around. And another one, the taxi that we got in put up the price ridiculous. So I think we ended up spending £60 to travel about 5 minutes. And it put it on the meter, but the meter had clearly been rigged. So as it was just going up insane amounts every few seconds, and we'd only just got into the country, so we had no sort of appreciation of what the value of that currency was yet. So it's a shame that these things happen. There are various other scams that you're told to watch out for, none of which are at the top of my memory at the moment, because it's not something that I like to think happens, but it does. You've got to be aware of it. But usually local knowledge and the local people that you're staying with, they'll tell you what the scams are and what to watch out for. But anything happened to you?
There's a few things like that. Just want to get back to one of the first scam you talked about, where they switched a note. Mm-hmm. So what would you do in that situation?
That's a very good question. It never happened to me as such, but it happened to a lot of my friends I was with. Sometimes you just don't even know. You just sort of go along and say, yeah, okay, sorry, my mistake. I'll give you the money that you thought you should be giving them, and then you end up spending a lot more. I had one, believably, in Germany. It's a long story, which I won't go into too much detail, but effectively she wanted to charge me double for the price of the taxi because she thought I'd booked some other taxi and they were arguing between the two of them and we didn't really know what was going on. So she wanted me to pay for her taxi and another taxi. So my response then was, that's not fair. I believe I only booked one taxi. Get the police, please, and we'll discuss it with the police. So she did call the police and the police came. And they agreed with me that it's not fair to charge me for two taxis when I've only used one. But that's in Germany, somewhere like Southeast Asia. My experience of the police there, which we'll get onto in a bit, they're not as helpful. So I think your options are you turn around and say no and walk away and hope that they don't do anything negative towards you. One time when I was in Vietnam, I was just walking down the street and out of nowhere, someone flying kicked me. And I, till this day, I have no idea what he believed I'd done or why he wanted to be violent towards me. Luckily, I sort of held my own a little bit, and then another friend who turned around and saw what was going on came in and helped, and we managed to get rid of him. But whether he thought I was someone else and had done something to him before, I don't know. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. What do you do to stop being scammed? All I can say is I can't tell you what to do once you are in the process of being scammed, but I can tell you just learn the local knowledge, read the guidebooks, have a good idea of what's going on, and don't put yourself in a position where you can be scammed.
Just want to go back to taxis. I guess to combat the problem you were talking about, switching notes, I think the best thing would be to just be aware of what the currency is worth. Mm-hmm. And just be conscious when you're giving it on, paying attention to exactly what you're handing over. Yeah. Also is the position of taxis. I know if you can, depending where you are, you might be better off booking a taxi, which in Southeast Asia is easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it can be done in South America, maybe looking at the more reputable ones that are around. Would you say that's the case?
You know what? I honestly can't remember.
Oh, brilliant. But one of the things they do is, which I'm assuming it's what happened with the meter one, is a lot of taxis wait for when the bus is coming into town.
Yeah.
So you get off the bus, you've had a 12-hour journey, you just want to get to your hostel.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh yeah, we can take you there. And then they'll drive you 500 metres but go the scenic route and drive all the way around town and just overcharge you for it. So unless you can get a good deal, I'd avoid going with people straight next to the bus stop because they are going to take advantage.
Yeah, sometimes they are helpful, but yeah, I've seen them take it. I think we did that happen to us once. I think it was in Bangkok. We just arrived back and it was like 4 in the morning. It was really late. We were all tired. Taxi driver was right where the bus was. It turned out we were literally the next corner, but he did take us on a bit of a scenic route, not ridiculous, but and then charged us a lot. And only the next day did we realise, that's where we landed on the bus. So there's another one to be prepared, is trying to access Google Maps or get access to the maps of the local areas so you can plan out where you should be going and have some idea.
And you can do that offline as well these days, just using GPS.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Going back to those ones, I guess, getting into a taxi, you really want to get it on a meter. If a situation comes up where you were saying it just escalates big time,
tell the taxi to stop and get out. Another one that I had was ping pong show in Thailand. It's obviously something that a lot of people want to go and see, and me and this girl said, yeah, let's do it, it'll be interesting. But we'd heard that a lot of these places, you go in there and then they force you to buy a certain amount of beers, say 3 beers, and the price of the beers is like £20 a beer, and suddenly before you know it they've taken a lot of money off you, and the doorman can be quite heavy and not particularly the nicest people to deal with. So me and her got onto Google and we just spent ages Googling what was the most safest ping pong show to go to. And it was something ridiculous like £3 in, and you weren't obliged to buy any beers, although we did. The beers weren't too expensive. And it was an enjoyable night, but you just take care, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the more research you do, the more prepared you are. Yeah, definitely take care. You can eliminate some risk by doing research and some of the scams about. And if you know what your plan is, then deviating that from that plan is the way you'd probably get scammed, where it's someone offer you some trip or...
Oh, well, this is, now you've said that, it's just struck my memory. I was in Marrakesh, and I'd seen on TV many, many years ago, Michael Palin had gone to where they make the leather tanning or something, and the colours looked amazing, and it was so just, wow, spectacular, and I really wanted to go and see it. So me and this girl are walking around Marrakesh and we get approached by somebody who says, oh, it's the Festival of Colours today. So I said, all right, what's the Festival of Colours? And he explained it was this tanning thing. And I was like, oh, wicked, I really, really wanted to see this. So he says, oh, it's okay, my brother will take you there and we'll show you. And I assumed they wanted some form of payment for this. So I was like, oh, okay, no problem. Well, it turned out the Festival of Colours is not a festival. It happens every single day. The walk that they took us on to get there was about 45 minutes, even though they promised us it was just round the corner. When we got there, there was no colours. It was just all blacks and greys, and it was very dull and not quite what I was expecting. And then the girl I was with was getting nervous because we were in the back of beyond, really, and it was not looking too safe. So we asked to leave, and then when we left, they pestered me I gave them a little bit of money, I can't remember now, but let's say £5, but then they wanted like 10 times that amount, and they were getting quite aggressive, and the way I handled that then was to get quite aggressive back. Now, that's not necessarily the best thing to do, but finally they did leave us alone and we walked off. But it's hard one to say, but trusting strangers. I mean, I've had some lovely experiences where we broke down in Vietnam and got no bike and the chain's broken, this has happened, and all these strangers come to our rescue and help us out. But it's difficult because some strangers are really nice and helpful and other strangers will take advantage.
And it is like you're saying, a tough one to talk about. We're just talking about going to these guys' countries and we're making it out as if they're all crooks, and
that's not the case, is it? No,
but it is something you need to be aware about, and the steps you can take to avoid that. Keep talking about taxis, keep gravitating back towards it, but get the meter on the taxi, know where you're going, have the route on Google Maps, which you can do easily these days. And
well, there's two other little minor stories I've got for you, and that's sort of linked, which is being robbed, which kind of comes in with a scam. The one, I was in Vietnam, and in Vietnam they weren't allowing you to go out and drink after midnight, so all the bars shut down at midnight. So we met somebody who knew somebody who said, we've got an underground party going on. So I went there. It was a little bit of a walk out of the city. When I got there, we carried on till about 3 a.m. My friends wanted to go, so I said, I'm fine, I'll walk back by myself. Didn't really know where I was going, and I was a bit drunk, but I kind of knew the gist. Anyway, I got towards the centre, and a scooter came by, so I sort of put my hand out asking for a lift. and I thought they'd stopped to offer me a lift. But as it happened, the one got out. It was a male and female, two of them on the scooter. One took my phone from my left pocket and the other took my wallet from the right pocket. Now, at the time, I didn't realise quite what had happened exactly, but realised the guy had got my wallet. So I chased after the guy, got my wallet back, hit him, and then ran because I was scared. So after I ran, I caught my breath back, looked, and my phone had gone, and had stole a £600 iPhone or whatever it was. So it happens, and then that I then reported to the police, which in itself was a lot of hassle, because I told the police wouldn't translate, so I had to pay for a translator, who was just some guy I met in a hotel. He then told me I wouldn't be able to tell that version of the story because I was doing something illegal. So we had to then make up something that happened in the middle of a shopping centre in the middle of the day, which I was a bit uncomfortable doing. But the only reason I wanted to do this was to get a number so I could give it to the insurance and claim it back on my travel insurance. But then the police said I had to hang around in the city for 3 days while they investigated the crime. I did that even though it was like against what we were trying to do with our plans to keep on travelling north. Then we went back 3 days later and they refused to produce a report. And they just said, no, we're not giving you any document to say you've had your phone stolen, and therefore I couldn't reclaim it on my insurance. Whether they were looking for a bribe, I don't know, but that's not the sort of thing you want to be doing, because suddenly, before you know it, you could be locked up abroad. And so I stayed well away from that. But yeah, and when I said bribe, that's another one that reminds me. A friend of ours, Charlie, I think he once told me that he was stopped in Thailand and the police officer had told him he'd got cocaine on him, which he hadn't. And then the police officer demanded to check his wallet and put cocaine into his wallet, and was then he had to pay the police officer to take the coke away or get arrested. I don't know how much he paid him, but it's all these things that aren't particularly the nicest, but it's just awareness of them, and this podcast I'm hoping will make some people aware.
Definitely. Should we move on?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, next topic, getting ill and healthcare. I think we've both got a couple of stories from this. I guess getting ill, for the most part, I was all right with it. There was one time when myself and you were off to the full moon party, mm-hmm. And I had a bit of a stomach bug, a bit of diarrhea. I think I got it again in Vietnam, and things got a bit more serious where I ended up following through on one of my farts. But, you know, I often say if you've not been to Asia unless you've pooed your pants. Many people have done it before me. Many people have done it after me. It's just
happens.
Have you done it?
I don't think I've pooed my pants, but I've had diarrhea big time in both Thailand and Bolivia, and that's possibly come back to haunt me because I've been diagnosed with IBS now, which apparently may be connected to some virus or something that I could have picked up in Bolivia. They believe, whether it's true or not, we'll never know, but that's the most likely thing they said.
I guess the other thing that about healthcare for me, this was in Thailand, is I went to a Muay Thai camp and I ended up with essentially it was a big spot on my neck.
That's called your head, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and I never knew what it was. It was just, so I knew where my neck was and my shoulders, but no, so I had this spot. And a big thing in martial arts gyms is staph infection. I think it's MRSA or MRSA, however you say it.
MRSA, yeah.
So it's one of those things that as soon as you get anything that looks like it, people want to be well away from you.
Mm.
So I had this spot on my neck and I couldn't go to some of the sessions because it was a lot of human contact.
Mm-hmm.
And then they basically, it got bigger and bigger and they were keeping an eye on it. And I thought they were being really caring. I think it's just because they didn't want me to spread it to people and themselves. But they said, you should go to a hospital and get that looked at. Like, it's getting bigger each day. There's a hospital in Chiang Mai. It's good. You've got a load of good doctors. Like, they speak English. It's fine. So I was like, cool. I'll get a tuk-tuk there or a song tao. It'll be fine. Spoke to another guy. He said, oh, no, there's a hospital up the road. You should go to that one.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, that's okay, I'll just do that. It's a 10-minute walk. Like, fine. Walked up to the hospital, got there, and I didn't speak a word of Thai. mm-hmm. and they didn't speak a word of English, which is fine because we're in Thailand and it's their country. But basically, I was saying to them, look, you know, I've got this spot. You know, can we do anything about it? And it was, they had there's about really attentive, to be fair. There's about four of them around me that's looking. Oh yeah. And they were trying to. We were just trying to communicate, and I was like, "So what do you want to do?" And they're saying what they want to do, and it's just, it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, he comes out of the word with incision on face. Does this guy know what he's just said? He basically just said he wants to cut my face open.
He'd probably be doing you a favour.
It's the last time I invite you on this podcast. So, like, I think he's got the right idea, and we somehow basically agreed if I came back with it was something like £20.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be able to make an incision on my face, and then a ladyboy nurse basically said, "Oh, I'd still be handsome." Okay, cool. Got the money, come back, and then they gave me these painkillers around it. And essentially sliced it open. They shouldn't have bothered with the painkillers because they did nothing. And I was squealing like a little child in there when they cut it open. It was so painful.
Mm.
And I came out of the line something like "F my life" with a wheelbarrow. Never said it before. Never said it since. It doesn't make any sense, but that was a line I said. And then I looked around, there's all these people who were actually ill in the beds. And I thought, well, they're in a lot worse spots than me. But it's funny how to assess that, because part of me is like, you know, it's quite stressful, you know, ill in a foreign country, people saying I've got this, might have this infection, I go into the hospital, there's nothing that they could, you know, it's really hard to communicate, really hard.
Yeah.
But then the other part of me was, well, I paid £20 and I was in and out within an hour and with antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And in the UK, you wouldn't, even though you get it free on the NHS and you can know what they're saying, it's kind of a little bit unreliable. So yeah,
you could be waiting 4 hours. Yeah.
But jokes aside, it's obviously better to be in this country, I'd say, just because you know exactly what's going on, or you got a better idea of what the information that,
well,
what's going on? So.
So a similar thing happened to me, not quite the same, but I was in Chile, and I was in a car, and it was taking me to a volcano, and we were going to trek up and down the volcano, and I did it, and it was amazing, spectacular views. It was in Pucón, and then I got it back into the car, and there were no seat belts, and the roads were very up and down and gravelly and not comfiest roads. And as we went over this one thing, I hit my head on the roof of the car. Now, I didn't really give it much thought at the time. I mean, I hit my head all the time, but anyway, I got back to the place and I had this headache. And I took some painkillers and the headache wouldn't go. And it seemed to be every time I moved my head just slightly, I was in pain. If I kept my head perfectly still, I was okay. So I thought, oh, it'll go. So I hung around for a few days longer than I expected to. And I was with a couple of Australian guys, but I'd like met them, but didn't know them that well. They were nice. I climbed a volcano with them, but they weren't like my best friends. So I didn't really feel like I could have someone to rely on. So I carried on going and I went up to Santiago. And I was still in pain, and every day I was just like, I wasn't enjoying myself anymore. I wasn't getting out. I wasn't seeing things. And I was like, well, do I go to a hospital? But if I do, I need someone there with me. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know how it is. They might misunderstand me and diagnose me with brain tumours. And my mind was just, I was just getting really upset and really anxious. So I made the decision, which looking back on it now, I feel a little bit foolish. But at the time, I just had to do something because I wasn't enjoying it. So I decided to pay for some flights home. Called my mom. I was really upset on the phone. I was crying to her. She met me at the airport and we drove straight to the hospital. And unbelievably, by the time I got back to the hospital, it was just starting to disappear. So the doctor sort of looked at it and he said, just take some anti-inflammatories and you should be okay. And 3 days later, I had no remnants of any headache whatsoever. So I then made the decision to fly back out there. I gave myself a couple of weeks just at home just to see the friends and family again, and then went straight back out to South America. But if I'd have had someone there with me, I think a really good friend to rely on, I wouldn't have done that. I'd have used them to get me through that tough time. The other story I've got is a friend of mine told me the other day. She was in Brazil and she ended up having a kidney infection. And it was quite serious and she was in an awful lot of pain and she was weeing blood and it really was not nice. So she'd gone to the hospital there, and because of the language barrier, it was really, really difficult for them to understand what was going on. I think eventually she told me they used Google Translate to get through, and what was stopping them from administering the medicine for a long time was they didn't know if she'd got any allergies. And eventually, when they got Google Translate working, they were able to ask her if she'd got any allergies. She said no. They gave her a drip and sorted her out and some antibiotics and whatever. And within a day or two, she was back to normal and all good. So the healthcare system over there is fine, but that language barrier can be tough.
Good little tip, Google Translate.
Yeah.
So moving on, the next topic is what, Phil?
Culture shocks.
Okay, so I feel like we've covered the most serious ones now. I feel like these ones are kind of...
Yeah.
You can spin them a couple of ways, depending on how you look at things, but if you come from a Western society like the UK or like Australia or America, Canada, whatever, I think you're kind of used to some solid order going on.
It's kind health of, and safety.
Yeah. Everything's kind of just moving, for the most part, in like a smooth and orderly way. You go to some less developed countries and it's just chaos in many, many forms. And it can be people carrying ladders on bikes or chickens on bikes and chicken catching a bus. I had someone tell me a story about someone had a sack of chickens and they all got out on the bus and they were all flying and shitting everywhere. Just things that would just absolutely never happen over here.
Yeah.
Another classic thing is, and there's a reason for it, but if you go to a restaurant, let's say in Thailand, food will come out at different times. It's just they get it ready and they bring it out and they get it ready. And I think the reason for it is that people from those cultures, like, they just, like, things are cooked and they bring out and they all eat. Then the next thing comes out and they all grab some and eat some. And so that's just
they're sharing their food. Yeah,
that's just the way they do it. Whereas we have our way, which doesn't fit into their way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't criticise the culture. You have to better fit around there, but you know, it can be frustrating if you're not expecting it.
Yeah, I think the most shocking things I've seen is like someone trying to paint their house and they're standing on like the fourth floor on their tiptoes on a balcony, and they are so close to falling off. You're like, how are you doing? There's no safety gear, no nothing. I've seen just streets. You walk down the street and there's just wires everywhere. And it could be raining with the monsoon season, and how there's not more electrical deaths and things like that, God only knows.
The driving is something to be questioned as well. I've had some proper frightening bus journeys.
If you're scared of the roads in the UK, wait till you go Italy or Thailand or Vietnam, all of them. I'd close your eyes if I was you, because it is terrifying.
Yeah, you kind of just got to trust that they're going to get you there.
I think the worst one I had was in, it was in Colombia. It was in Medellin in Colombia. And we were in this little tiny taxi. It was yellow. And it was barely enough to fit four people in. It was like a little Fiat Panda or something, but even smaller than that. And it decided it was just going to play chicken with a bus. And how we missed this bus, I will never know. It must have been millimetres away from hitting this bus. Honestly, I'm probably the most scared I have ever been. It was terrifying.
It sounds it.
But
I think, do you know the one that frustrates me? And I think you've explained the reason to me before, and you can do it again. But it's the timekeeping. If you're catching a bus somewhere and you're told the bus is 2 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
kind of means like 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it's just very relaxed and chilled, I guess. They go when they're ready to go because they want the passengers, they want their trip to be economical for them. So if they've only got 2 people, they'll tell you it's going to go at 2 o'clock, but then there's enough for 10 people on that bus. You wait until all 10 turn up and they might have told the others, we're leaving at 4 o'clock. So that's that, isn't it? You've got no choice in the matter.
I guess, it's just one of those things to be aware of. And I think the first bus journey, I was like, this is disgraceful. How dare they turn up at this time? And it was quite frustrating. And after a while, you're just like, okay, it's just the way it is. You accept it. It's not great, but there you go.
I mean, these are part of the reasons that you go to abroad. You go to see the different things, how different people do it. There was an amazing one. Unfortunately, I saw it on the TV and not in real life, but it was in the Philippines.
Sorry, we can pretend that you were
there. Oh, yeah, I was there, yeah, in the Philippines. And there were some train tracks, and the trains are just full to bursting in Manila for people going to and from work at peak time. It's just crazy. You can't get on a train. It's like India where everyone's rushing to get on it. So what they've done is they've got some old mining, I don't know how you describe it. It's like a cart, if you like, that fits on the train tracks and you can push it. So these people, they're self-employed effectively, and they round up 8 to 10 people to sit on their cart, and they will push their cart down the tracks to get people to work. And it's absolutely insane because there's like no health and safety. If a train comes, you're going to die. So,
how do they get... They can't go at any sort of pace, can they?
I think they're just...
It's not the ones where in the old Western films where they have the thing where they have like a seesaw and they push it down.
I'd love to be able to remember exactly. I have that vision in my mind, but I also have a vision of someone literally just pushing and running with it. But however they do it, I don't know. The people pay a little bit. So, in fact, it was homeless people. It was their way of earning money, this program was saying. And it was just absolutely fascinating, but completely no health and safety at all. And so I suppose connected with this culture shock thing is probably one of the biggest, most annoying ones for me, which I found very difficult to deal with, was if you're walking down the street, again, because you're seen as rich, you will get approached and be asked to buy things all the time, and it is constant, and there's no break from it, and you cannot walk down the street without not having hassle. And at the start, it's like,
it's fun.
Yeah.
So look at this, it's awesome. Like, I'm talking with the locals. Like.
But after it happens for a while, it just becomes horrendous for me. What I did to stop people from getting in my face was, it's a bit wrong this, but I basically acted as if I was slightly disabled, mentally disabled, and therefore they didn't want to come and speak to me, which is just... But it's just too much. And so the one point, the film The Beach, some people may be aware of, and it felt a little bit like that, where I'd gone to an island called Koh Rong, and it's so peaceful and so quiet there. There's no one trying to sell you anything at all. And I'd spent 10 days there, and I just relaxed, and I felt so good. And then I came back to the mainland in Cambodia, which was Sihanoukville, and immediately people wanted to sell you stuff, and the sight, and the smells, and everything. It was, I just couldn't cope with it. It took me 2 days to get back into the swing of things in real life cities. It was just very difficult.
But I think for me as well, it's in the same categories. Is haggling for things. We've already touched upon it in the taxi thing that I keep coming back to, but that's a classic one where you're just like, well, you go on a meter, and I'm like, no, it's going to cost this much. And I'm like, oh, Christ. We both know that you can afford to run it on a meter, mm-hmm. and that's what I want to pay. Can we not just do this? And are you buying a T-shirt, or are you buying whatever it is from the stalls that you need? It's like, oh, how much is it? And then it's like they'll just fly in with some astronomical price,
mm-hmm.
and then
but the thing is, they know you're going to haggle. It's a done thing there.
I think again though, in the given the theme that you said, it just gets tiring after a while.
Yeah,
you both kind of roughly know what price you're going for.
Yeah.
So can we just agree that straight away? But it doesn't work. I even tried that. Like, there's some things where they're like, oh, 1,000 baht. And then we both know it's going to be, you know, probably closer to 100 baht.
Yeah.
So you just go, look, 100 baht. And, oh, no. And then it's just like not paying it. And it's like, okay, 100 baht eventually. But it doesn't really work. It, you know,
well, I think the way I got it to work was offer what I was prepared to pay. If they weren't prepared to accept it, I'd walk away. And as soon as you start walking away, then if they come and pull you back, then they know you're serious, you know they're serious, and you can settle on a price. But if they're not prepared to pull you back, you're obviously offering less than their bottom line that they're happy to accept. So that's a tactic I use for that.
Yeah, pretty solid. Do you like the haggling lifestyle there?
Oh, I don't mind it as much. I don't think it's that bad, but I'm not very materialistic in the sense that I try not to buy lots of clothes if I can help it. I just try and let a t-shirt last me for as long as possible. And the only time I ever remember buying presents was for Christmas for the friends I was with. Otherwise, I wouldn't be buying much, so I tried not to get involved with too much haggling.
Fair enough. Okay, the last point on our list. I'm going to let you take over and lead this one because it's something that affected you a lot more than it affected me.
Well, it's a weird one, this, but when you go to Asia or most hot countries in the world, there's mosquitoes and you expect to be bitten by mosquitoes. So for whatever reason, the mosquitoes really like me, some days more than others. And it just, there was one night I must have gone out and I must have forgot to put mosquito cream on or something, but I got bitten alive. And if you've got sort of 2 or 3 mosquito bites on you, it's a bit annoying, but you can deal with it. If you're covered head to toe in mosquito bites, 50, 100 mosquito bites, God knows how many.
He set some records.
It's horrible because you're constantly wanting to scratch and constantly like, oh, just feeling on edge. And it takes 3 or 4 days for those bites to go down and to stop itching. And it's just, oh, it's very uncomfortable for those who are affected by the mosquitoes. Some people barely get any. But what I did notice was after about a month of being there, I almost got adjusted to the mosquitoes and they tended not to bite me as much. But that first month was horrible. And kind of linked to that is just a case of I expect most people like to feel clean. You come out of a nice shower and you feel clean, but over in hot countries you wake up in the morning, you need to put on suntan cream, so you're already, your skin's already oily and greasy, and then you spend the day, you enjoy yourself, you come home, you have a nice hot shower or cold shower in some of the countries like Thailand, you feel refreshed, and immediately you've got to go and put on mosquito spray again, so your skin's all not very nice and clean anymore, and just little things like that. But I'm sure we're divulging too much now. We're getting to the point where it's becoming a bit obscene.
Complaining about absolutely everything. I think we've got through our short list and we've covered a few points. And now I think there's some good stuff in there, some stuff for people to be aware of. But I think we should re-emphasize the point that we do like travelling.
Oh, I think it's the best thing ever.
But yeah, it's a good topic just to point out those things that people can avoid, be aware of, plan for.
Yeah.
And I think that's good value. So, Phil, I appreciate your idea. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience and stories with us.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for inviting me.